ready.
Man, this whole society got our women looking at themselves crazy, man. Can you imagine if a dude was walking around talking about he didn't want to wear a pair of khakis because it made his dick look big, man?
For real talk.
You ain't ready for the relationship your grandmother and granddaddy had. You ready to leave your dude if he don't text you back fast enough.
All the time.
And see, that's what's so crazy to me, right? Because you can be against police brutality and not want cops to die. The two ideas ain't mutually exclusive.
Welcome to the Span Report with your host, Mr. Span.
Welcome to the Span Report podcast. I'm your host, Mr. Span, and this is episode number 86 of the report. Yeah, man. Back again on the mic 1 week after episode 85, man. And I got a bit of a listener feedback off of the last episode, so we're definitely going to get into that later on into the show. Got a few things to talk about with you guys this week, man. Empire has come back, and the Respectability Politics Warriors have come back as well. So we're gonna talk a little bit about that tonight. Also, Dr. Ben Carson, former neurosurgeon, and right now he's a presidential candidate for the Republican Party. He said something about not believing that Muslims should be president of the United States. So we're gonna talk a little bit about that. Also, the Black Lives Matter movement, This Week in Black Lives Matter. I should make that a segment, right? This Week in Black Lives Matter, a mural was painted in Detroit to some praise, but of course also some detractors. So we're definitely going to speak about that. I have some of my own experiences with talking to some of those detractors on Facebook. So we're definitely going to talk about that. And Mrs. Louis Farrakhan spoke about the women's role and how men operate and how men conduct themselves. So yeah, we're going to dive into that too, man. We're going to dive into that too. But before we get started with all of that, before we get into the meat and potatoes of this show, I got to let you guys know how you can get in touch with me here at the how you guys can get in touch with me here at the show and let your voice be heard. You can hit me up at the hotline. The hotline to the show is area code 313-288-0485. That's area code 313-288-0485. Leave me those voicemail messages. I will play those messages on the show, and of course, I will respond in kind. You can also email the show at feedback@thespanreport.com. That's feedback@thespanreport.com. Leave me those email addresses, or leave me those emails, and I'll reply to those emails. I'll read those emails and reply to those emails live right here on the show. You can also hit your man up on Twitter and Instagram. My name on both of those platforms is Mr_Span. That's Mr_Span. Hit me up on either Twitter or Instagram, and we could chop it up throughout the week. Definitely looking forward to talking to each and every last one of you, even some of the people that I might not necessarily really want to hear from. But definitely looking forward to having some conversations with you guys on both of those platforms. Hit me up there. You can also leave me a review. Leave a review for the Span Report on iTunes and on Stitcher Radio. It's one way to help the show grow. It's one way to let your voice be heard. I will read those 5-star reviews here on the show. And I will thank you right here on the show for leaving those 5-star reviews. But leave your man Span a Stitcher or iTunes review. Much appreciated. And for all of your Span Report needs, you can go to... All right, there it is. You can go to thespanreport.com. All of the... podcasts are available there. All of the videos associated with this podcast are available there. All of the video clips or the audio clips that I play are also available on thespanreport.com. Go to thespanreport.com, vote in the polls, leave a comment on those episodes. It's another way to get your feedback heard. And yeah, man, it's that's where you go to get everything Span Report related. Yeah, man. But it's been pretty eventful week, man. I mean, well, as far as weather is concerned, like here in Detroit, man, the weather's been beautiful, man. I'm not really looking forward to this fall and winter weather. The summer is really hanging on right now, so I'm like cherishing every minute of it, but it's good. You know, 70 degrees, I can rock with it. That's pretty much perfect weather for me. I might just dip into the pool once this year. Yeah, man. But yeah, let's just get into it, man. I said one of the first things I wanted to talk about this week, man, of course you guys know, if you're a fan of pop culture, that the show Empire has come back for its second season, man. I watched the first episode of season two, man, and it was pretty much an extravaganza of cameos, man. Like, they had all of these different celebrity cameos in here. You had Chris Rock, who tried to pass off as like this hardened ass criminal. I really wasn't buying it, but okay, you know, whatever. You had Marissa Tomei, you had Don Lemon, you had, I'm drawing a blank right now. So, you had the Miss Lawrence guy from Real Housewives of Atlanta and that other show that he does. I'm sorry, it was so many cameos, man. Like, it was a lot of cameos in this particular episode, right? And so of course with the return of Empire comes the respectability politics warriors, right? And we talked a lot about this last year when I think even me and Mr. Gates, we did an Our Disagreement show about a show like Empire and television's role and how black people are viewed and everything else. And one of the things that, one of the more popular memes that was kind of going around was that, like, you know, while y'all sitting around watching Empire, I'm at home, you know, starting my empire, you know, some shit like that, right? And then another, I guess what you would say, prominent black thinker, depending on, you know, how prominent you think this guy is, Boyce Watkins, also made a statement on Facebook about Bill O'Reilly and Rupert Murdoch having more money to talk shit about black people because we're watching Empire, right? As if Rupert Murdoch and Bill O'Reilly really needed Empire to talk shit about black people, right? And, you know, I'm not going to even get into the whole thing about Fox TV and Fox News being, you know, pretty much run kind of differently. And some of the programming that goes on Fox is a whole hell of a lot different from the perspective that you would get from Fox News. But, you know, people are going to run with that the way that they will, man. People are going to have that opinion the way that they will. One of the things that I think is a bit irritating, though, is that, like, it gets to a point where when it comes to black entertainment, when it comes to black entertainment, that there's always this need for us to, there's this need for black entertainment to represent only the positive of black people. For a lot of folks, it's like, if it's on TV and it has a predominantly black cast, then it has to be a positive representation of black people. If it's not 100% a positive representation of black people, then it's feeding into the stereotypes, and white people are always going to be looking at us as thugs and drug dealers and whatever and what have you, right? And it was funny because, like, I got into a little conversation today. Shout out to my man Scarfinger. It was a guy on his Facebook. I'm not friends with this other guy, but me and Scarfinger are cool. But it was a guy on Scarfinger's Facebook, and he was talking about how this meme, it was a meme talking about how Viola Davis only won her Emmy because she was with a white man and How to Get Away with Murder. And it was also saying that Uzo Aduba only got her Emmy because she was walking, she looked really crazy on Orange is the New Black, right? Totally disregarding these women's role and how well they portrayed themselves in these roles because of the stereotypes. Right? Because of these stereotypes. Now, usually when people make these sort of accusations, they haven't really watched these shows that they're talking about, right? And it came out that this dude really hadn't watched any of these shows, but he was so willing to co-sign this meme. And I, like I said, man, you got to stop with this meme university shit. He was so ready to compliment and to co-sign this meme where, you know, it didn't matter that what this meme was saying was pretty much misleading, right? So, you know, we get to a point where our own people are denigrating some of our great work because it doesn't fit a politically correct narrative that we want to portray to white folks, right? And it kind of goes back to the whole thing with Boyce Watkins. You know, where I said this last year, where the whole thing, well, we got to get out of this mindset of where we're so worried about what white people think of us that we're too afraid to be ourselves. Right. We can't be ourselves, especially in public, because we're afraid of how white people are going to perceive us. Never mind the fact that no matter how we project ourselves to a large extent, there are still going to be white people who view you in a certain lens and look at you in a certain light because they don't necessarily have the exposure to black people in the way that they probably should, right? You know, I think there was a poll that came out that said like 75% of white Americans don't really come across black people on the day to day. They don't really have black friends. So they don't really know the ins and outs of black culture or how black people view a lot of different things. They just really don't. They're oblivious to it, right? And that goes into the whole white privilege thing because they don't have to be a part of black culture. They don't have to educate themselves on black culture and everything else. Funny thing that happened to me earlier this week, right? As a matter of fact, yesterday, while I'm at work, one of my white coworkers referred to an adult black male on my crew as boy. And he didn't really know. I mean, he was a young, you know, he's a young guy. He's maybe 20 years old. He didn't really know. I'm just going to say that for him. He didn't really know the ground that he was treading on, the dangerous ground that he was treading on. And he almost caught a fade because of how he was addressing this adult black male by calling him a boy, right? And the history that goes behind that. You know, he didn't really know. Because why? You know, his only interaction with black people are when he comes to work. And if we decide that we want to interact with him and tell him certain things, then that's where he gets his education from. But outside of that, this kid is, you know, he's snowmobiling, he's riding dirt bikes on frozen ponds and shit like that. He doesn't really know. So for a lot of white folks, they just really don't know. But the thing of it is as a black person, as me myself, I can't concern myself with making sure that every time they see me, that it's always a positive thing. I have to be myself. Same thing when it comes to our entertainment. To a large degree, we have to be ourselves, and we can't necessarily worry about whether or not white people are going to view us in a positive light because of a television show, right? You know, a lot of people romanticize the Cosby Show. And that kind of goes into this discussion that I was having with this guy on Scarfinger's Facebook page earlier today, where he talked about, you know, there isn't any positive black representation in dramas. And it's like, wait a minute, hold up. Like, you want a positive black drama? That's kind of an oxymoron. Usually when you have a drama, there's a whole lot of bullshit going on. And whether that be white, black, Hispanic, Indian, or whomever, if it's a drama, there's a lot of times there's some bullshit going on. There's some treachery going on. There's some backstabbing going on. There's some adultery going on. There's a lot of different things that goes on when you're talking about a drama, right? So when I brought up the fact that there was a show like Black-ish, you know, if you really want to get politically correct and you want a positive representation of black people in America, you bring up a show like Black-ish and his thing was, well, that's a comedy. Well, the Cosby Show was a comedy too, right? Cosby Show had a father who was a doctor, a mother who was a lawyer. They were raising their kids in New York, and you know, they had their kids going to college and things like that. One kid married a military man, another married an aspiring doctor. So you had this image of this positive black family, but it was still rooted in a comedy series, right? You look at a show like Black-ish now, which I think is a great show. I always think it's very funny, it's very smart. Like the last episode, they were talking about the use of nigger, right? And they did it in a real intelligent way, man, a real funny way, a real smart way. And I appreciated the way that they used that and the nuance around everything that going around the use of that word. But you look at the character of Dre. Dre's an ad executive. His wife, Bo, is a doctor. Their kids go to a private school. They're paying for their kids to go to private school. The comedy comes in this black family raising themselves up in a mostly white environment, right? But even with a show like that, sometimes it's just not good enough for people. So now that show isn't good enough because it's a comedy and it's not a drama. So the goalpost keeps moving, right? Now, even with Viola Davis's Emmy win, if you have a brother just sort of denigrating that Emmy win because, well, she only got that because she was with a white dude. It's not about her Emmy win being because she did a phenomenal job in the portrayal of this character. It's only because she was with a white guy. And to a large degree, some of our people believe that, right? It's only because she was with a white guy. But usually it's those people who probably haven't even watched the damn show. Haven't watched an episode of it. So, yeah, man, it's just interesting how to a large degree we become the police of our own to where we can't even actively be ourselves because we're so worried about how white people are perceiving us. Now, the funny thing about that is that when you tell critics like that, that they're too worried about white perception, they won't look at it that way. They're looking at it as like, well, we don't have, there isn't a balance, man. Like, yeah, we'll have an empire and they showing drugs and rappers and hoes and all this other stuff. You're like, okay, well, what about Blackish? Well, that's a comedy. Okay, well, what about, Survivor's Remorse, you know, which is a show that's actually being produced by LeBron James about a kid who came up out of the hood. He's a basketball player, is in the NBA. He's trying to give back. He's taking care of his family. He's trying to give back to a lot of people that he's known since he was, you know, back in the hood. And it's like that navigation of his life in the NBA coming from where he came from. Nobody like, well, that's on cable. I ain't got cable. It's like it's always some sort of issue with the shows with black lead characters where it's never enough for some people. And the goalposts will always be moved. Now, mind you, I'm not saying that we shouldn't strive for more. I'm not saying that at all. But what I am saying is that we can't knock the work that's being done. And when it does get recognized for being some of the best on TV, and then we have ourselves talking about, well, so, you know, it only has to be a positive representation. It's like, no, man, everything isn't positive. And I talked about that when it came to the Facebook dislike button. Everything isn't always going to be positive. It's not realistic for everything about black people on TV to be positive. I would just like a realistic representation of black thought or of the black experience in America. That's all I'm looking for. You know, before the ask was just for the opportunities for black people to be in front of, to be on screen, whether that be movies, whether that be on television, whether that be behind the camera, whether that be in a producer's role. We have more black producers. We have more black actors on the TV screen. We have more black actors on the silver screen. Like, take for instance, Straight out of Compton and what was that? The Perfect Guy were two movies featuring mostly black cast that were the number one movies in America for five straight weeks, right? I like Straight Outta Compton. Perfect Guy, not so much, right? But those are opportunities that we were once asking for, and people are actively supporting going out to go see these movies to where they're number one at the box office, and then you still have that small segment of people who are like, well, you know, she was only with a white guy, or, you know, that's only because they were showing thugs and everything. It's like, they're always going to be detractors. You're never going to make everybody happy. That's one of the things about black people not being a monolith. But at the same time, I do think that some of these respectability politics, when it comes to pop culture, when it comes to the worry of how white people are going to view us after this fictional this fictional piece of work, pretty much. After this fictional piece of work, when we start so much worrying about what they think of us, then we cripple ourselves and we cripple our creativity and we cripple what we are able to produce. And I'm just over that, man. I'm just over that. So, yeah. The respectability politics, man, y'all need to leave that shit alone, man. But, yeah. Moving on. Of course, you guys know we're in the political season now. President Obama is coming to the... towards the end of his term. I'm gonna miss this dude, man. Yeah, he's coming to the end of his term. And we have, you know, on the Republican side, man, it's like, as someone who follows politics, it's just looking more and more and more as if the Republican Party panders to xenophobia, homophobia. You know, they have issues with women when they're trying to defund Planned Parenthood, when they, you know, just and coming up with just straight up false allegations when it comes to the Planned Parenthood thing. I think Carly Fiorina was on there and she talked about, you know, a baby, a fully alive baby, fully formed baby, being born, and in this video they're saying that they have to keep this baby alive so that they can harvest this baby's brain. And, you know, most fact checkers come to find out that this whole this characterization that Carla Fiorina was talking about was some bullshit, right? Like that didn't happen. And then she doubles down on it, right? And that's been the thing with the Republican Party as of late. They start doubling down on their bullshit. And you got a lot of people who just don't care, right? Even if it's bullshit, they just don't care. We need something different, right? So, Dr. Ben Carson, whom a lot of us know as being a neurosurgeon. He's actually from here in Detroit. You know, the book Gifted Hands was written about him. I know a lot of us read the book Gifted Hands as required reading when we were kids, you know, like, you know, especially at school. They gave you this book. You had to write book reports about it. You had to learn about Dr. Ben Carson. And it was a wonderful story of Dr. Ben Carson's rise from being in the ghettos of Detroit to becoming a renowned neurosurgeon, right? Wonderful story, right? But over the years, Dr. Ben Carson has become one of those people where you kind of scratch your head like, is that what this motherfucker really said? Really? Is that what you're thinking? Right? And so right now, Dr. Ben Carson is running second only to Donald Trump, which is even more of a reason why, like, the problems of the Republican Party are more pronounced, because Donald Trump has not only been not presented any specifics policy wise, but he's been racist with his ideas of Mexicans. He's been xenophobic with his non-answering of the question of Muslims in America, especially when that one guy got up and asked him about President Obama being a Muslim and we got to get him out of there and we got to get these Muslims out of here and that being a problem. But these guys are the ones that are leading the Republican Party, right? And so the issue that's been going on with Ben Carson as of late was Ben Carson did an interview on Meet the Press with, I think it's Chuck Todd is now the host of Meet the Press now. But he did an interview with Chuck Todd of Meet the Press where he was asked what his views were when it came to Muslims in America and whether or not they would be fit to be president. And here's what he had to say.
Should a president's faith matter? Should your faith matter to voters?
Well, I guess it depends on what that faith is. If it's inconsistent with the values and principles of America, then of course it should matter. But if it fits within the realm of America and consistent with the Constitution, mm-hmm. No problem.
So do you believe that Islam is consistent with the Constitution?
No, I don't. I do not. I would not advocate that we put a Muslim in charge of this nation. I absolutely would not agree with that.
And would you ever consider voting for a Muslim for Congress?
Congress is a different story, but it depends on who that Muslim is and what their policies are, just as it depends on what anybody else says, you know. And you know, if there's somebody who's of any faith, but they say things and their life has been consistent with things that will elevate this nation and make it possible for everybody to succeed and bring peace and harmony, then I'm with them.
And I take it you believe the president was born in the United States and is a Christian?
I believe that he is. I have no reason to doubt what he says.
All right. Dr. Carson, I will leave it there. I look forward to speaking with you again soon.
All right.
All right. Now, here's the thing. It's funny that Dr. Ben Carson would get on national television and state that he doesn't believe that a Muslim should be president, right? Where, of course, we know the irony of someone like Dr. Ben Carson saying that is really thick. You know, for the longest time, folks thought that a black man should not be president of the United States. We just got our first one. Right? This nation has been what? We've gone through 44 presidents. The first one was the 44th one, right? And Ben Carson is striving to be the second. And there, even with Barack Obama, there were issues about his race being a question of his ability to lead this nation, right? So it's ironic for Dr. Ben Carson, gifted hands, to say things like, well, I don't believe that a Muslim should be president of the United States. Now, one of the things that really gets kind of lost in this whole thing, especially when it comes to President of the United States, was, you know, especially on the right, it seems that they've forgotten about the separation of church and state and the way religion is not supposed to have a role in how we govern here in America. Right. And so you think about, you know, instances such as that as Kim Davis, who's been in the news as of late when she refuses to issue marriage licenses and marriage certificates to homosexual couples because of her religious convictions. Right. Where she's in a position where her religion should have no place. Right. Just do your job. Your job is to process these certificates and take these fees that these certificates bring the state. That is exactly what your job is, right? Whether that be a marriage certificate, whether that keeping up on property taxes, whether that be registering people to vote, whatever. That is your job. Your religious convictions does not get in the way of that, right? If I wanted to go work in food service, right? And I have. I've worked at like Little Caesars. I worked at Wendy's before. One of the first things, like, I remember they asked me at Little Caesars was to shave my beard. Now, I'm not really one of the guys. I don't get a really thick beard, right? This is as much as you get with me, really. If you're watching live, you can see this. I don't have a whole lot going on when it comes to my beard, really. But one of the first things they tell you is to shave your beard because, you know, they don't want that food. You know, you don't want hair in your food, right? You don't want hair in your food. So imagine you coming to Little Caesars and it's a pizza made by me. And you got like hair all under the cheese. You ain't trying to hear that I'm a Muslim and, you know, this is part of my Muslim faith and I need, you know, I can't shave my beard, right? It's against my religion for me to shave my beard, or this beard has religious significance for me and I refuse to shave it despite what my employer needs, which is me not to have no damn hair in my face so that I don't have hair falling in the food, right? It's the same thing here. Your religious convictions should have no place in a government position, right? You govern on the behalf of the people, not on the behalf of your religion. And I think that gets lost, right? And so for Dr. Ben Carson to get on here and to act as if the only religion that is conducive to being a good president in America is to be Christian is a bit, it's just ironic for him to say such a thing. Right. And it's bigoted for him to say such a thing. Right. Now, of course, you know, a lot of people, they look at things like Al Qaeda. They look at things like ISIS and they look at it as if, you know, the majority of Muslims or not even so much the majority, but they look at those examples and they extrapolate from that a lot of Muslims are like that. Right. That there's a good number of Muslims who are acting like that. We can't take this risk, right? But we don't do that same thing with Christians. We don't do that same thing with when the KKK, who purported themselves to be a Christian organization that were terrorizing black folks all over this country to keep them from voting, to keep them from asserting their civil rights, to intimidate black folks, to terrorize black folks. We don't do that to Christians. We don't say, well, you can't be president because of the KKK. In the same way that we say, well, you can't be president because there's people out there that call themselves ISIS. We just don't do it. We don't marginalize Christians in such a way. Right. And it's simple in its application. When you really think about it, it's really quite simple. It's just the hypocrisy of a lot of Christians and those who will purport themselves to be Christians when it comes to politics. It's just this idea of, well, we don't want Sharia law, but if we can get some laws and call this a Christian nation. And we start telling people that they can't get married because they're gay, or we can ban interracial marriage, or we can keep these black people locked up in slavery because that was also used to subjugate us too, right? The Bible was used to justify slavery in the same way that it was used to justify keeping white and black couples from intermarrying and everything else. The Bible and religion, period, has been used a lot to subjugate and to discriminate people of all, you know, of all walks of life, pretty much. So it's just for someone like Ben Carson, who you kind of grew up looking up to in a way where like, it's like, man, it's possible for me to become a doctor and do X, Y, and Z. you know, someone like that, it makes it possible for me. And then for that person to then go on and say, well, you know what, I've gone through, now let me go back and start making it, making sure that I can start closing doors on others, is that's what's disappointing. Not so much because, like, his being a Republican is, you know, I could care less about, but it's the whole thing of him getting to where he is and then on the back end of it, making sure that others can't aspire to the same things that he's been able to attain, even if that's running for president of the United States, right? He doesn't believe that Muslims should be president of the United States. And that's what's disappointing for someone who comes from a disadvantaged background to then go back to then come from disadvantaged place, get to a privileged place in America, and then say, well, you know what? I'm going to disadvantage others. That's what I find really fucked up about what's going on with Dr. Ben Carson, man. So, yeah, fuck that guy. Yeah, he's on the fuck that guy list, right? Yeah, man. Outside of that, let's see what else we got up here, man. Oh, yeah. Black Lives Matter, This Week in Black Lives Matter. Like I said, I really should start making that a segment, This Week in Black Lives Matter, man. I'm going to get music and everything about that. But here in Detroit, there was a mural painted by an artist. I believe his name is Rendell Ryder. He's an artist commissioned out of, I believe it was Miami, Florida, who he did a mural in Detroit. It was a mural in Detroit where he wrote Black Lives Matter on a wall nearly 2,000 times. I think it said it took him like maybe 80 hours to do it. And I'm going to have a picture of that mural on thespanreport.com. Excuse me, so you guys can check that out for yourself. But Rendell Ryder did a mural, a Black Lives Matter mural in Detroit. He was commissioned by the NAMDI Center for Contemporary Art in Detroit, where he wrote Black Lives Matter on the wall nearly 2,000 times, right? And, you know, one would think that that would be something innocuous. You know, like, we know that Black Lives Matter movement is a movement that has been, been going on for, you know, a couple years now. We're a couple years now into this movement, right? And Rendell Ryder is a white guy. Also, I think it's important that we mention that Rendell Ryder is a white dude who took 80 hours out of his life to say that Black Lives Matter, and he wrote it 2,000 times on the wall in commemoration of that, right? And so, you know, of course, there are a lot of people who look at this and they know what Black Lives Matter mean. They know that it's a fight against state-sanctioned violence against people of color, which is what I'll keep repeating that. It is state-sanctioned violence against people of color, which is what Black Lives Matter means and what the movement is fighting against, right? You know, he did that mural, and, you know, of course, there are supporters of this mural, but, of course, even with something as, this, there are going to be your detractors. And we've had these, you know, the Black Lives Matter movement has had these detractors for quite a while. Not even just, you know, the white people who simply don't get it. But then you also have people of color who just have a misunderstanding of what the movement is about, whether or not that be Richard Sherman, whether or not that be Stephen A. Smith, or even my homie, Mr. Gates, right? They have a complete different view of what Black Lives Matter means and what the movement is about, right? So, here's the thing, man, and I caught myself in a bit of a debate, if you will, and I catch myself doing that a lot, right? I'm always in somebody's shit. But there was some instances of where I was talking to some people about this particular mural, because it was actually a news story on My Fox Detroit here in Detroit, a channel that was a Fox affiliate here in Detroit, and they did a story on it. I was on their Facebook page and we were talking about it, and one of the things that kind of caught my eye was the fact that, like, there are so many, and I understand. There's a lot of white folks who get it. There's a lot of white folks who get it. But there's so many who just don't, right? Who don't, or they just refuse to try to get it, right? So this story goes out on mindfoxdetroit.com, and they put it on their Facebook page and everything else. And I come across this comment where this lady, Jamie Lynn Stanton, right? Jamie Lynn Stanton writes, I think that you will find that not many view the Black Lives Matter movement in a positive light. The title in and of itself is offensive. I don't see anything positive coming out of it. Now we have innocent police officers being murdered across the country. All the movement brings is more divisiveness and violence, right? All right. Two things. I'm going to assume that Jamie Lynn doesn't really watch the news and isn't really informed to the fact that police are actually serving under one of the safest years they've ever had since these police killings and police murders or police killed in the line of duty have been recorded, right? Is it like I believe it right now? It's at like a 25% low as far as police killings on the job involving criminal activity, right? So she's talking about police officers being murdered across the country. That's simply not the case. It's just simply not the case. It's just not. It's just not, right? But then she talked about the Black Lives Matter movement and the title in and of itself. The title of Black Lives Matter in and of itself being offensive. So I asked her, right? I said, wait. So are you asserting that Black Lives Black lives having value is offensive to you? Let me guess, you're not a racist though, right? Because look, people who think like this don't believe that they're being racist when they say things like that. They just don't get it. They don't understand. And I might even be giving her a pass right now by saying that she doesn't understand. She may very well understand exactly what the hell I mean. And I think a lot of folks do understand exactly what I mean. So she says that the Black Lives Matter, saying that Black Lives Matter is offensive, right? And so she never answered my question. Jamie Lynn Stanton never answered my question. But there were some other white folks who took offense to me asking her why did she say that Black Lives Matter was offensive and that asserting that Black Lives Matter being offensive was kind of racist, right? So Emily Keller states to me that I think you need to reread what she put. She says, and I quote, the title in and of itself is offensive. At no time did she say Black lives having value is offensive. Now, I'm going to need Emily Keller to understand something. Stating that the title is in and of itself is offensive is saying that Black Lives Matter is offensive. Is that like that whole comprehension thing that we got going on, that reading comprehension? I know we were tested on it a lot when we were kids. You know, we took the MEEP test and the ACT test and the CAT, like all these tests that we took as kids to figure out whether or not we were comprehending exactly what we were reading. Now, mind you, I asked Jamie Lynn a question about how the Black Lives Matter was offensive to her and that assertion was offensive to her. Emily Keller is denying that stating that Black Lives Matter or that title was offensive was a racist thing, right? She's saying that, please stop putting words in other people's mouths, as if I didn't understand what I was reading, as if my comprehension of what I read was off. I understand completely what I was reading. This woman said the Black Lives Matter, that title was in and of itself offensive. Now, Emily Keller comes back to say that at no time did she say Black Lives having value is offensive. Now, if she finds the title of Black Lives Matter offensive, what the fuck is she saying then? Emily Keller, I know you're probably not listening, but damn, what is she saying? Right? So then another guy comes in. This guy's named Rick Chazier. And he says, shove it. Only a racist would think non-black lives don't matter. Looks like you're the real racist here. Right? Now, mind you, in this interaction, I've asked one question. And this one question was to a woman who stated that the title of Black Lives Matter was in and of itself offensive. But I'm the racist. You see how that works? You see how that shit flips? So because I'm asking the question, I need you to clarify this shit that you're saying, right? You're saying that Black Lives Matter is offensive to you. And I'm asking you, because the title is asserting, because the title in and of itself is asserting that Black lives have value. So because Black lives have value and me and the assertion that Black lives have value, you find that offensive. Now, that makes me racist for questioning why you find it offensive. And we get to talking about, I know some of you, you've seen me tweet, you've seen me put Facebook statuses up, and we talk about white denial syndrome, right? And these are some examples of white denial syndrome. When you say something racist and someone who is of the offended race bring it to light, where you act as if this person is delusional in what they've seen and what they've heard and that they don't know what they're talking about. Right now, in this exchange, in just four statements, I become racist for simply asking the question of Black lives having matter being offensive. That asserting that Black lives have value is offensive. I've become the racist, right? And this is why it's so, not only that, this is why it's so disappointing when I start hearing Black critics of the Black Lives Matter movement start talking that shit, because it's like, dude, we getting it from everywhere already. Do we really need it from our own? Right? Do we really need it from our own? We getting it from everywhere already. Do we really need it from our own? Right? So, yeah, that happened. But then it kind of went on some more. Now, there was another lady by the name of Dani Taylor, right? Now, Dani Taylor goes, she comes into this discussion and she's making some assumptions about my experience as a Black man, right? Or better yet, she's making assumptions about her experience as a white person who's raising Black kids, right? So Dani Taylor comes in and she writes in to say that, I see you haven't lost a Black stepson and a Black son-in-law, a Black son-in-law to chocolate Klansmen, right? So all you niggas in the hood, y'all are chocolate Klansmen now. Who are committing genocide every single day in Black communities across this country. These chocolate Klansmen cross those racial barriers and do the same to non-Black folks, right? Now, one of the biggest arguments or ways to get people to shut up about Black Lives Matter is to start talking about, well, what about Black-on-Black crime? We talked about that with Richard Sherman. I've talked about that with Mr. Gates. That assertion just keeps popping up. What about Black-on-Black crime, right? But now Dani takes it a step further to say, well, you know what? Not only you niggas killing yourselves, but then you coming over here and y'all fucking with us too, right? As if we don't know that 85%, 84%, or white people are being killed by people who look just like them. You should be worried about them people that's in your hood, that lives around you. You are more likely to be killed by somebody who looks like you than this Black boogeyman myth that you got going on. You're more likely to be killed by somebody who looks like you than this boogeyman or the Black man coming in your house and come doing something to you, right? But she goes on, she says, none of the victims nor their families have power, and they're seldom justice served because of Black supremacists like you. Now, I'm a Black supremacist. Not only am I racist, but I'm a Black supremacist who keep the lid on communities by supporting criminals and enforcing by any means necessary the law of the land. Snitches get stitches. I just let you wind yourself into that web. Now, I'm a Black supremacist. I'm a racist, and I support the no snitching policy, and I don't care about Black on Black crime. I don't care about people being killed. Like, all of this stemmed from me asking one simple question, and that question was asking another woman who said Black on Black crime. Oh no, it wasn't Black on Black crime. It was Black Lives Matter was offensive to her, right? And I asked her why. Again, I asked her, why was that offensive? And you're not racist. You don't think you're racist because you just said that, right? So now I'm a Black supremacist, and I am a racist. I am the racist because I asked a question. Dani Taylor goes on to say, if I can't get you to care about Black folks, I try to get other folks to care about themselves. If they start to care about their own, who are victims of the same chocolate Klansmen and their voices silenced by you pro-black racial supremacists, perhaps no more black children would have to live their entire lives without their loving daddies whose lives were taken simply because they worked hard for themselves and their families and had something in their pockets worth putting bullets in their brains to acquire. Now, it's interesting getting this lecture, right? And this all stems from me asking a question of why Black Lives Matter is offensive to you. Now, I've gotten hit with the black on black crime. I've gotten hit with the police are dying every day at the hands of black folks. I've gotten the no snitch policy that I supposedly support. Like, all of these assumptions are made about me. And then on top of that, like, these people, you know, it kind of goes on to the all lives matter thing, right? All lives matter comes up. And it goes into the whole reason why all lives matter is bullshit, and stating that all lives matter is bullshit. And I've said this before, that the all lives matter movement only comes up when you want black people to shut up, when you want black people to not speak on issues concerning police overreach and police brutality and police misconduct. It only comes up when you want black people to shut up. Right. And it's interesting how that always happens. Like, even with this mural in Detroit being built, you know, they were talking about, well, why wasn't it All Lives Matter? One of the, was that Namdi? Well, I don't have his name right now, but his first name is Namdi. He's the, I believe he's the curator at the Namdi Contemporary Arts, Center for Contemporary Arts, where he talked about the All Lives Matter movement isn't fighting for anything. And when you think about it, they really aren't. When Black Lives Matter talk about police overreach and police brutality, rather than talking about all lives matter, how about you talk about how we can bring about accountability to these police departments when they screw up, right? Instead of trying to get those who are being affected by this police misconduct to shut up, how about we get these police officers to do what the fuck they're supposed to be doing? There's a lot of them that are, but then there's a lot of them that aren't, right? And the only time we hear this All Lives Matter bullshit is when we want black people to shut up about police brutality. Right. And now, like I said, I become a racist. I'm racist. I'm a black supremacist. I am perpetuating this notion that black people shouldn't be locked up for shit. Like, all of these things. Like, and, you know, it's funny. Danny Taylor was talking about she lost a black stepson and she lost a son-in-law. Right. Now, here's another thing, too, when it comes to white folks, some white people, when they're married to black people and everything else, where they get to thinking that because they've ingratiated themselves to some black people, that now all of a sudden they can lecture black people on what it is to be black and what it is that we should be concerned with. And so I had a Twitter interaction. It was somebody who was who also listened to the His and Hers podcast last week. If you haven't listened to the His and Hers podcast, it's Jamil Hill and Michael Smith. I believe that the title of that episode was What Matters, right? And they caught a lot of flack because they also were on the opposite end of the spectrum when it came to the comments that Richard Sherman made. And you know, they were talking about some of the Twitter interactions that they were getting into when people were calling for their jobs and people were talking about how they're perpetuating this narrative and this divisive narrative and that they were bullying Richard Sherman and all of these other things. And Breitbart picked it up, which is the same people who was talking about that Sean King stuff. I keep telling y'all, man, y'all need to check y'all sources where y'all getting y'all shit from, right? But they talked about how, you know, there were all these interactions with these people who were really upset about them asserting that Black Lives Matter, right? And so I was on Twitter. I had some interactions with some of the people that they had, you know, that were talking about this. There was this one guy. Hold on, let me pull this up right now. Just a second. Name is David Ahola, right? Now, David Ahola, he's got his profile picture as him sitting with like four black kids, right? And, you know, he was talking about, like, actively trying to get Jamil Hill and Michael Smith fired because of their discussion about Black Lives Matter on the His and Hers TV show, right? So it's very divisive and everything else. Now, David Ahola is raising four black kids, right? He's raising four black sons. And one of the things that I spoke to him about was the fact that I thought it was interesting that he would seek to try to get these people unemployed because he couldn't relate to what it is that they were talking to, right? And so he tweeted me back and he said that, so, wait a second. Oh, here it is. He says, "You don't know me or what I can relate to. All I hear is excuses. I'm raising young black men to be responsible for self and actions." Now, here's the thing. When you start acting as if, especially here, I guess I should like lay this down to just narrow it down to a certain degree. For my white listeners who are raising black sons or black kids, when you talk about race relations as if black people are making this shit up, you are disservicing these kids that you're raising, right? So to a guy like David Ahola, who's raising four black sons and he's teaching them to be responsible and he's teaching them to not have excuses and everything else, when you deny that things like institutional and systemic racism are things that they could possibly be affected by, then you are crippling your sons when they grow up. You are crippling them because they aren't going to know how to deal with these situations. Why? Because the person raising them is telling them that this shit does not exist. And why did he tell, why is he telling them this shit does not exist? Because he's never experienced in a way that a black man or a black woman has in this country. Right? So you cripple your kids into thinking that this thing can't happen to them. All you have to do is be, again, what? Twice as good as white people. We've been taught that a long time. You got to be twice as good to be half as, to even be seen as half as good as them, right? And even when you got white people raising you, I'm not saying that it's not possible, but what is important is for you not to deny institutional and systemic racism that can offend or affect your kids in such a way to where you look crazy and your sons are in a position where they aren't built to handle it and they don't understand what's going on. And why? Because you didn't prepare them for it when you were bringing them up. Why? Because you thought that all you had to teach your sons was responsibility and accountability, which are great things, but that ain't it. That's not it. And so it's interesting for me as a responsible black man, you know, for a white dude to be telling me I don't know what the fuck it is I'm talking about to be living in America as a black man, right? Or to have white people call me a black supremacist because I'm asking a question of why is the assertion that black lives matter, why is that assertion offensive to you? Nah, I'm the racist and I'm a black supremacist, right? And this is the level of the denial syndrome, right? We'll go back to that with the whole thing of white denial syndrome, where they don't believe because they haven't been privy to it and they haven't been conditioned in such a way to where it's a daily thing that happens where they don't have to deal with it. This is where white privilege comes in too, because you don't have to deal with it on a daily basis. You don't have to know what it is to navigate in certain ways in America as a black person or period. You don't have to deal with it. Again, we go back to that statistic of 75% of white people don't have a black friend. They don't know. They don't have to know. As a black person, I have to know in order to kind of navigate this fucking world. Right? That's where white privilege comes in. As a black person, I have to know how to navigate around white people. Right? I have to. When I'm at work, I'm surrounded by white people. When I go and handle business, I'm surrounded by white people. I have to deal with white people. A lot of white people ain't got to deal with people who look like me. They just don't. And that lack of experience kind of colors their perspective in a way where they don't think that these things are really happening in such a way where they just really think it's unbelievable. Like, it can't be that bad. Because they never experienced it in that way. So that white denial syndrome starts kicking in when a black person is telling them, yo, this is fucked up. And what you said was fucked up. Like, wait a minute. I'm not racist. I mean, come on. Come on, man. I mean, I'm trying to. That's ridiculous for you to think that I'm racist. What are you talking about? Right? Right? You know, so when a question comes up, where I ask a person to kind of clarify it, and then I get 1,000 people just kind of jumping down my throat because I asked the question of why Black Lives Matter is offensive to you. It's just crazy, man. It's crazy to even think that there's so many people dealing with this denial, dealing with the fact that they just can't wrap their minds around the fact that, hey, America is fucked up for people who don't look like you. And you don't have to necessarily deal with it in the way that they do. And so, yeah, man. Yeah. White denial syndrome is basically the denial of racial segregation, degradation, when you're looking right in front of it. Like when somebody's telling you about it, you just deny it just because you don't believe it. Like you just don't believe that it could be that bad. And it's not because sometimes it's not because you're a bad person. Sometimes it's just because you simply are in awe, right? Sometimes it's simply because you're in awe. Like, really? Because you never thought it could be that bad, right? But the one thing I want to say to people like a Danny Taylor, who think that you can lecture me on what it is to be Black and what it is to lose a Black family member on behalf of Black on Black crime or whatever, or David Ahola, who thinks that because he's raising 4 Black kids that he knows what it means to be Black in America and how to prepare those kids to be Black men in America. You can't lecture me on that. I live that experience every day. You are voyeurs. You are voyeurs to that. You have a voyeuristic experience to that. I live it every day. I've been doing so for 35 years. I think I'm a little bit experienced in the area. Right? So, yeah, there's that. There's that. Another thing happened. And that kind of leads into what the title of this episode of the podcast is tonight, where we talk about self-control. What's that? Right? Minister Louis Farrakhan, right? Minister Louis Farrakhan did an interview with Hip Hop Since 1987 TV on YouTube. They have a video on YouTube. And, here's the thing. And before I get into this, here's another thing, too, because I've been dealing with this a bit lately. I've been accused of tearing down Black leaders. Right. Like I'm tearing them down. Like a buddy of mine asked me, who is acceptable to you? Because I've spoken critically of Bill Cosby. I've spoken critically of Tariq Nasheed. I've spoken critically of Umar Johnson. I've spoken critically of quite a few people that a lot of Black folks are kind of holding up right now. I've spoken critically about them. Right. The whole thing with Bill Cosby, y'all know why I'm critical of that. The whole thing with Umar Johnson, I think a lot of the shit that Umar Johnson says is bullshit, and so I call him on it. A lot of things that, with Tariq Nasheed, I think that, it's the transition that he's made is interesting. I know he's trying to distance himself from it, but at the same time, it's like, come on, dude, you said that, just go ahead and own it, So, yeah, man, like, I it's a lot of brothers who are like, man, what the fuck, Span? Like, every brother, man, you got something bad to say about him, right? And it's not so much about me having something bad to say about him. It's just that, like, yo, we can't accept bullshit, man. We have to call the bullshit out when we see it, right? And just because it's coming from somebody who we may admire, we can't let that shit pass just because we admire them, right? We can't be holding people up as if they're deities, man. That's where I'm at with it, right? If somebody that I look up to, like, say, for instance, like, I grew up idolizing Michael Jordan. I thought Michael Jordan was the greatest athlete ever, right? I wanted to be like Mike. I wanted to be like Mike, right? It's still kids walking around now wearing Michael Jordan shoes, never even seeing the man play, right? And then I got older, and I started seeing some of the shit that Mike was doing. And I'm like, man, dude was an asshole back in the day. Dude's an asshole now, right? I don't have the same reverence for Michael Jordan that I had when I was 13, 14, 15, and I had a hoop dream. I just don't. And so a lot of this comes from me being, me thinking critically about some of the messages that I intake, some of the things that I see that where I just don't necessarily agree with it. And so me disagreeing with these dudes about some of the shit that they say isn't me tearing them down. It's like, yo, man, that was some bullshit and here's why. And I think it's important for brothers to kind of like have their own minds in that way. Like, you know, we can't just be putting a rubber stamp to every goddamn thing. Right? So when it comes to talking about Minister Louis Farrakhan, right? I can remember a time where I would listen to Minister Louis Farrakhan. I would listen to speeches on YouTube and everything else. Like, I remember there was I remember Tavis Smiley used to do the State of the Black Union. Farrakhan would get on there and do these, like, he would have these really good speeches, right? Really good speeches. Like, yeah, man, I'm feeling that. And then Farrakhan would come out with another thing where he's talking about, he was abducted by aliens and he went up into the wheel and all of this other stuff, right? He said, I think he did that at like a Savior's Day speech or something. And it's like, I don't know about all that, but okay, man, you know. And so you start looking at it like, okay, sometimes Farrakhan will say something that really hits the mark. And then sometimes Farrakhan will say some shit that's totally went left. Right? So here's an instance of where Farrakhan says some shit that goes totally left. Right? And so I know it's going to be some brothers who've already listened to this and they agree wholeheartedly with it, right? They agree wholeheartedly with it. I don't. And so in this interview, Farrakhan was asked about a woman's role in pop culture. And specifically, he was asked about Beyonce by the sister, Tahira X. He was asked about a woman in pop culture's role. And here's what Farrakhan had to say.
This past weekend, it was the Made in America concert.
Who?
The Made in America concert.
Yes.
Given by Jay-Z. And Beyonce was the headliner the first day. So we saw so many young women, you know, going down there to see Beyonce and the rest of the young women performers. And these are artists, female artists that they look up to. So we've seen you speak with the rappers, but what is the specific role as the female artists? The Beyoncés, the Rihannas, Nicki Minaj was in the city.
Yeah.
And for those in my age bracket, you know, the youth, what is our specific role and what is their specific role as female
artists? You know, the woman is everything in the way of building civilization. Elijah Muhammad said, where there are no decent women, there are no decent men, for the woman is the mother of civilization. When you have a woman that is ignorant, she doesn't know, but yet she's the first teacher of her child. She's the first nurse of her child. Before the child learns to say God, they say mama. And mama is the agent of God in the rearing of the children. The question is, what does she know? Who is teaching her? Look at Rihanna, look at Nicki Minaj, look at Beyonce. These are some of the most beautiful, well-formed women you could find. Well, in the way of the enemy, and I'm not talking about Jay-Z, I'm talking about the people that set styles. When I was in show business and on television, you could not film me as a calypso artist from here up, but never from here down. If I made a suggestive move, that was not filmed. Today, you strip the woman of her clothes. How can a man think straight looking at the beauty of Beyonce? I mean, come on.
So what do you say to those who
manage them? Help us to be more sane. A man is made into a dog. by a way a woman presents herself to a man. There ain't no preacher out there that's holy, that a woman can disrobe herself and the man still think Bible, still think Quran. Hell no. He's thinking woman. And how do you rule a man? You rule him by the beauty of your body and the suggestion of sex.
All right. Here's one thing. Here's one thing. The idea that a man becomes a dog simply because a woman is disrobed, I think that speaks more to a man's self-control than anything else. Right? Because you can be in a situation where you can be in a situation where a woman is being really suggestive to you, where say for instance, if you're at a strip club, right? You're at a strip club, you're a married dude, you're at a strip club though, right? And some of those girls are really working girls, right? Some of those are really working girls. You go into a strip club and this stripper decides to offer you a chance to actually be with her at the end of the night when she gets off of her shift, right? You have to make a conscious decision as to whether or not that's something you really want to do. Now, your self-control can say, hey, I got a woman and kids at home, or I just got a wife at home. I don't want to screw up what I got at home on the chance that I'm going to be with this one woman for one night at the cost of my pockets, right? Now, there are some men who don't necessarily exercise that level of self-control where they're just thinking with their dick and that's all they're thinking about it anyway. But at the same time, that responsibility for how you conduct yourself as a man with a woman falls squarely on you. So this is where me and Minister Farrakhan disagree. You might have your mind on ass, but at the same time, you also have to have your mind on whether or not you can control yourself when it comes to being in compromising positions.
And sex is the joy of a man with a woman. So when you strip a woman down, a man becomes a dog. You don't make him a man. You make him to treat you like an object of sex rather than the creative genius that you are. Ain't no man great without a woman. So
here's another thing too, and I think this is what's the like part of the genius of what it is to be Minister Farrakhan, when he'll say that there's no man great without a woman, right? So now he couches this misogyny in a sense of, he couches this like this, well, women are great. Yeah. The women are great. But, you know, us men, you know, we turn into dogs when we around you and you ain't get your stuff on and everything else. So he'll make it sound good by saying, yo, the women are great. There's no great man without a great woman. But at the same time, this man has no self-control when he sees you unrobed. Right? But the message is palatable to a lot of folks because he'll say, there's no great man without a woman. Right? So I just want you guys, I want people to just kind of understand where a lot of this kind of seeps in for a lot of folks, is where they start talking about, well, you know, he's talking so positively of the sisters. Like, yeah, but he was also saying some really fucked up shit too. And this goes on. So check it out.
How do you change that? You have to educate the managers. Jay-Z is a good man. Jay-Z is a good manager. But now your woman is on display. Do you want men looking at your woman, being tempted by your woman, to make advances at your woman? Who wouldn't want to be with Rihanna? Who wouldn't want to be with Nicki Minaj? These are talented women, but you strip them, then their bodies become the tool that is being used to promote the degradation of the woman and the subjugation of a man. All of this has to change. Why wouldn't a young woman want to be like Beyonce or like Rihanna or like Nicki Minaj or like others? They want fame. They want to be looked at. They want to be admired. They want to be loved. But look how beautiful you look. I'm sitting across from you. You are well covered. Only thing I can see is the beauty of your face. But I know the beauty of your face is a sign of the beauty of your mind. Why should I be tempted by the beauty of your body? I'm not your husband. I'm not your lover. I'm your brother. I'm your father. I'm your uncle. But today, men, very few women today that grow up in America find themselves abused by fathers, by uncles, by grandfathers, by brothers, by cousins. There's hardly a woman that can say, I have not been abused by somebody that I trusted. We don't understand the love that a woman has for a man that's her father, a man that's her uncle. That's the first precious one that she's learning from. She's admiring. And the admiration of the female toward the male, if he doesn't understand it, he wants to take advantage of it.
All right. Now, again, how this goes back into the whole thing of you start blaming the victim sort of thing. And we hear this a lot. You know, we hear this when you talk about, say, for instance, a woman being in a guy's apartment at a certain hour. Right. And he takes it. Or, you know, why did you go to his house? Or why were you wearing that? Right. That this really goes into the why were you wearing that? You know, because now all of a sudden we as men can't control ourselves because this woman was wearing whatever the fuck it was that she was wearing. All of a sudden, now I done lost all control over my lower extremities and I got to force this woman to have sex with me, right? Now, some of this kind of goes over a lot of dudes' heads. Like, yeah, Minister Farrakhan gets it. You know, she came over at like 3:00 in the morning, you know, and I wanted to do X, Y, and Z. She knew what it was. If she says no, then it's just no, dude. It's just no. Right? So, it's couched in the whole thing of, well, you know, she admires her fathers and her uncles and her brothers and everything else. Why are her uncles and her brothers and her fathers looking at her in such a way that they start looking at her as a sexual object, whether she's covered up or not? At what point do we start putting the onus on these dudes to not take it, right? At what point does self-control come into the picture as a man? At what point does it come into the picture?
And you ruin a woman. So many of our women today, they're cold and hard, man. They ain't got no love for a man because they've been misused by one of the men that was great in their lives. This is real. So I would want to say to my brother Jay-Z, as much as I love and admire him, man, I want to see my sister beautifully covered. And when Rihanna was in the Middle East, yes, and she had beautiful. To, oh, she was beautiful. Magnificently beautiful. We don't even realize that uncovering yourself is beauty, but it's the beauty of the beauty of your form. See, God gave you a form like that because there's never been a problem of men procreating since the beginning of time. You are that. But to cover you and then to demonstrate who you are here, this is who the woman is. Ain't no man great without a woman. There's no man doing something that a woman can't do, and in some cases, do it better.
Remember what I said now. We will couch this misogyny in saying that how great the woman is. We will couch it in saying a man can't do anything great without a woman. But at the same time, put your damn clothes on, be somewhere where I can't see you, and if you get abused and sexually molested by your uncles, your daddies, your brothers, or whatever, is because it's your fault, right?
Man is Hakim. That's the attribute of God. That means wise. She's Hakima. That means God has made her to be a possessor of wisdom. Don't degenerate your woman and make her nothing but an object of sex. She's more than that. So I would encourage Jay-Z, and I hope you take it in the spirit that I give it out of love for you and honor for your greatness and honor for the love and beauty and greatness of your wife. I would love to see our women clothed, demonstrating their gift of their talent. The gift of their form should be seen by those who are worthy. I mean, an unworthy dog looking at something that beautiful that he wants to paw at but can never have. Do you know what that does to a man, where he can see you and can't have you? Then he'd go home and attack a child.
All right. And this is where the shit goes off the fucking rails. Right? So now, because women like Beyonce, women like Rihanna, women like Nicki Minaj, who are pop stars, they are selling music, they are selling sex, they are selling an image. Women like that are causing men to go and grab a child and do what they want with them, right? And the onus is on Beyonce, Rihanna, Nicki Minaj, Miley Cyrus, or what have you. The onus is on them to cover up so that these dudes who are watching them on TV, who can't have them, but they're watching them on TV, they're watching them on the internet, they're watching them on, they're going to concerts and whatever. But the onus is on them to keep these dudes from molesting these kids. And it goes into the whole thing of like, well, damn, we've had child molesters, molesters for quite some time. Before there was ever a Rihanna, before there was ever a Beyonce, before there was ever such thing as Nicki Minaj, motherfuckers is out here molesting kids. R. Kelly is a prime example of that, right? So here's where it goes off the rails for Minister Farrakhan, where he says something really fucked up, and a lot of guys, man, because, I'm gonna just end this Farrakhan stuff here, though, but here's the thing that I think is very important, and here's what I think really needs to be said when it comes to dudes, where a lot of guys start rationalizing their fucked up behavior. We'll start rationalizing it, and so we'll prop up somebody like a Minister Louis Farrakhan when he talks about the fact that that Beyonce doesn't have any clothes on, that Rihanna doesn't have any clothes on, that Nicki Minaj doesn't have any clothes on, and we have these images of them and we can't have them, so we'll go and grab a kid and everything else, right? And to a large degree, I think, and this even goes into like when I start criticizing some of the actions of Bill Cosby, is that to a large degree, I think some of the brothers are looking at it like, yo, these are some of the things that I've done before, right? These are things that I've found myself doing where I didn't think anything was wrong with it. But society is all of a sudden turning, or society is telling me, yo, this is fucked up and I probably shouldn't have done it. And this is where you start getting these vehement defenders of, say, something like Bill Cosby, or the defenders of R. Kelly, or the defenders of, well, nobody really defends child molesters, but when you get Minister Louis Farrakhan saying, well, it was because they had images of Beyonce and Rihanna and Nicki Minaj, that because they couldn't get to these women, so they started reaching for the kids, it's like, hold up, man. At what point do we start holding motherfuckers accountable for the shit that they doing? You can't sit up here and say that because I pine for Beyonce, that, well, because I couldn't get to Beyonce, I'm going to go ahead and fuck this 13-year-old over here. That should be all right. You can't do that, man. You can't say that with a straight face, or, nobody would really listen to you with a straight face. They look at you like you was out of your fucking mind. At least they should. Right? And so here's the that's why I think it's very important. I think it's very important for us to stop espousing this bullshit about women being responsible for their own demise. In the same way that we have to stop espousing this bullshit about black people being responsible for their own demise. Right? I know a lot of the things that people get irritated with me about right now is because I advocate for the liberation of everybody, right? I don't want nobody to feel be subjugated at all. I don't. So if I see some gay people who want to get married, who want to be on fucking TV, then damn it, that's what it has to be. If I want to see black people on TV and not being beaten up and not being abused by the fucking police, then damn it, that's what it's got to be. If I want to see women not having to be bothered with niggas fucking with them all the time, not having to be covered by the protection of a man all the time for them to go about their daily business, then damn it, that's what the fuck it's got to be. That's what I'm about. If I'm going to be for the liberation of one, I got to be the, like, that's where I'm at. It's pretty much a real cut and dry segment for me. It's a real cut and dry thing, man. I can't actively talk about injustice in one instance and ignore injustice somewhere else when I see it. So even when I see someone as respected as Minister Louis Farrakhan saying that because Beyonce does the music that she does, because she wears the clothes that she does, that because she has this image that she does, that all of a sudden the dudes that are raping kids are responsible, or that she's responsible because these dudes go out here and do the fuck what they do and do what they do with these kids. Or that women are somehow responsible for a dude raping them, or that a dude does not have the ability to control himself and he becomes a dog when he's around a woman who is somehow not clothed or not all the way covered up in the way that, you know, a lot of our Muslim brothers like them to be, right? That's the issue that I think a lot of people don't necessarily, especially I guess when it comes to me, right? So that goes into why, you know, I get questions about who do I approve and stuff like that. I'm like, look, I'm not for the subjugation of anybody. I'm not. And so if I'm not for the subjugation of anybody, if somebody as a Louis Farrakhan or Tariq Nasheed or an Umar Johnson speaks to an issue that seeks to further subjugate another person of color or another person who's in an already marginalized group, then I'm going to speak to it and I'm going to tell them where they fucking up at. That's what I'm going to do. Get with it or get the fuck on. So, yeah, man. At some point, self-control is a real thing as a man. Right? Self-control, what is that? That's some shit when you don't do some shit you ain't got no business doing. That's when you do some shit where you know, hey, I don't need to do that. That ain't nothing but trouble for me. I can't use that as an excuse because of why I'm doing this bullshit that I'm doing. Right? There's going to have to come a point as a man where self-control and where self-control is paramount to my being a man, where I hold myself up as a man because I have self-control. Right? And I purport that to all the other dudes around me. Like, nah, man, I'm not cool with that. Fuck that. We not doing this. Or if I am around a bunch of motherfuckers who are on some bullshit, I separate myself from that bullshit. Right? That's what we got to do. As men, that's what we got to do. We got to call the bullshit out when we see it. And we got to separate ourselves from bullshit when it's going on. And we got to call out our dudes, our boys, or whatever the fuck you call them, we got to call them out when they own some bullshit. Right? This is kind of why I'm like, I'm really for like that dislike button. It's, I see a lot of bullshit that just need to be disliked. Even though some people might not necessarily agree with me on that, right? But yeah, man, it's disappointing. But not, you know what? I take that back. It's not disappointing because Minister Louis Farrakhan is operating from a religious place. He's coming from a religious place, not too much farther from where, you know, the church comes from. And, you know, it's, you know, a lot of our subjugation of women comes from a religious place. It comes from that, right? So I can't necessarily say that I'm disappointed. I can't even necessarily say that I'm surprised. It's just one of those things that Mr. Louis Farrakhan says that I'm like, you know what? I'm checking out. I can't fuck with that. I don't believe what I just can't fuck with what you're talking about right there. You know? And like I said, I know it's a lot of brothers who believe what Minister Louis Farrakhan said was like A1, that are all about it. I just can't fuck with that. I can't fuck with that kind of message. And, you know, it kind of is what it is. It is what it is. But, yeah, man, it's time for the listener feedback portion of the show. I got some emails. I got a few emails that I need to get to. And then I got a voicemail that I need to play. Actually, this is a voicemail. My man called me during the last episode. So I got that voicemail as well to respond to. But yeah, man, here we go. I'm going to get into these emails real quick. And let's see. Okay, I got an email from the homie Reggie. And Reggie writes in to say, what's going on, Span? Just right in to say that you put out another excellent show. It was refreshing to hear dudes sitting around talking about marriage and not shitting on it. And I think it's smart of you to hit up guys who have been able, I'm sorry, who have been at it for a while. They say to surround yourself with people smarter than you, and I think that holds true here too. But if there's one small criticism I have with anything you said, It was as if you weren't listening as far as changes in your relationship as marriage matures. I'm not married myself, but I've seen it a lot where people fell apart and didn't like one another and it fizzled out. I've also witnessed people make adjustments to how they interact with each other and the marriage continued on. So change is inevitable. I think both Taurus and Rod were expressing that. But other than that, great show and great listeners always. Keep it up, man. All right, thank you again for writing in, Reggie. Here's the thing. One of the things about the whole change thing when it comes to marriage that I was rejecting. I don't think I was rejecting the fact that change happens during the course of a relationship. Like I said, when I met my wife, she was 23, I was 29 going on 30, and we were in different places. You know, we were definitely in different places in our lives when it came to how we view relationships and where we wanted to be as far as relationships were concerned. So I know that change is possible. Our relationship has changed over the years, right? I wasn't necessarily not listening to the fact that change is going to happen. What I was rejecting and what I think a lot of dudes have is this perception that because you get married, your wife all of a sudden turns into this miserable, awful bitch, right? And I was rejecting the notion that simply because I got married, that my wife was going to all of a sudden turn into this miserable, selfish, awful bitch, right? Awful bitch. Like, I just wasn't, I'm not buying into that, you know? So I understand that change, when it comes to marriage is concerned, I understand that change is going to happen and they're going to be, I mean, if you listen to my show, you've known that I've changed, right? If anybody who's listened to this show can tell that there's a lot of things about me that have changed over the years, that my perspective on some things have changed over the years. I am not the same guy I was when I started this podcast. I am not. And I own that. I am not the same dude, right? So it'll be a bit impractical for me to believe that, you know, if me and my wife are going to spend the rest of our lives together, that there are going to be some things about our relationship that doesn't change, right? That there are going to be some things that we just not going to go through. We're going to go through some things over the course of the rest of our lives, right? So I'm not saying that that's not possible. I'm just rejecting the notion that simply because I got married, that my wife is going to become something different, or that my wife was just going to all of a sudden, just on the basis of us being married, she was going to turn into this miserable, awful, selfish bitch. I don't believe that. And that's what I'm rejecting, right? But yeah, man, I'm glad you enjoyed that episode, though. I appreciate you writing in, Reggie. And write in again, brother. I hadn't heard from you last week. I got worried, man. But write in again, brother. I'm glad to hear from you, and I hope to hear from you again, brother, real soon. And God damn it, I'll be damned if he didn't write in again. And Reggie writes in again to say, wait. No, this isn't Reggie. I'm sorry. This is Renee. And Renee writes in to say, hello, Mr. Span. This is Renee. Checking in to say that I really did enjoy that marriage discussion with you and the other two gentlemen. It was really refreshing to hear three grown men talk about marriage and not talk about it as if it was the most miserable thing in the world. It was great to hear both of their perspectives on the issue. I would also like to say congratulations. I hadn't told you up to this point, but I'm sure the new Mrs. Span is an amazing lady, and you said that we'll get a chance to meet her on the show, so I'm excited for that. Well, here's the thing, and thank you again for those congratulations. I really do appreciate that. But here's the thing, my wife isn't going to be on this show, but we are going to create a new podcast for you guys to listen to, and it's going to be something that me and my wife do together. That'll be a joint venture with me and her, so you guys will get a chance to hear her perspective on some things concerning our marriage and concerning her perspective. You know, she's going to give her perspective on some things, so you definitely get a chance to hear her. We're trying to get some things ironed out as far as that is concerned, but yeah, that's going to be a thing. We're going to have I'm going to be on another podcast, my wife is going to start a new podcast, and that's going to be our joint venture together. But yeah, I'm excited about that as much as you are, real talk. Let's see. Also, she writes in to say, you also did your thing with Mr. Gates on that debate you had. Although I think there is a bit of validity of what Mr. Gates was saying, I agree with you that those issues are more or less the end result of much larger issues that must be addressed. It seems to me that Mr. Gates was attacking the results and not so much the issues that brought the results that he would want to get rid of. Yeah. I mean, I agree with you. I'm pretty sure Gates wouldn't. But I do believe that there are much larger issues that kind of spawn the issue of the whole thing of black on black crime, like the institutional and systemic racism that kind of fostered the environments where black on black crime, so to speak, even though I believe it's a misnomer, but the institutional and the systemic racism that kind of fostered the environment where those kind of things could thrive, I think are issues that definitely need to be addressed. And I think that at the end of the day, you know, we have to attack that. And I think right now Gates is more so about the accountability of those within the neighborhood, taking accountability. And I'm an accountability guy, but I think he's more so about taking the accountability right now and not waiting for those systemic and institutional problems to be addressed. Right. I think that's where we differ, you know, but yeah, I mean, that just kind of is what it is. You know, Gates has a perspective and I have a different one, you know, and that's just kind of where it's at. Let's see. Lastly, I mean this from the bottom of my heart. I want to sincerely thank you as a black man for being a reasoned and mature voice when speaking on issues concerning the Black Lives Matter movement and issues concerning black women. I can't tell you how hard it is to listen to the radio or other podcasts where brothers are simply clueless as to the issues we face, or simply don't care, or simply want us to push our issues to the side so that we can further them along in their fight, as if we haven't been doing that since forever. Well, I appreciate that. I appreciate that. And you know what? Like, again, I will say this, man. Like, I am not the same dude that started this podcast. Like, some of my views have changed. Some of the way that I, you know, the way that I look at things is just different, you know, and, you know, some of that comes with being exposed to different lines of thinking. You know, like, here's the thing, like, just being open to listening. Like, I think sometimes where we mess up is like, we're so ready to, just instead of listening to somebody, we're listening to them only to create a counterpoint. Right. So we're formulating our argument to counter whatever it is that they're saying. And I think what a lot of brothers really need to do is to shut the fuck up and listen. Just shut the fuck up and listen. and you'll start, you know, kind of gaining a different perspective, a different appreciation for what it is that your woman or the women in your life are dealing with and what they're talking about and how they view things and how they are, you know, it's just a whole different thing. And so if you really are for, you know, if you really are for, you know, supporting your woman, you know, supporting your woman comes with listening, right? And not allowing, you know, not allowing, you know, just like certain narratives to kind of take place around you. And I think that's pretty much why I use my podcast in a way where I kind of speak to some of these issues. I speak to them because, like, these are discussions that aren't really had amongst dudes, right? A lot of dudes aren't really necessarily sitting around having these discussions. You know, we may talk about some basketball, we may talk about some football, but even when we talk about issues when it concerns women, we always talking about it from our perspective, right? We talk about it from our perspective. Like, you know, when we talk about child support, we're talking about it from our perspective. When we're talking about feminism, we talk about it from a negative slant. When we talk about marriage, we're talking about it at a negative slant. Like, anything that has to do with women, we don't necessarily have a lot of knowledge about. So it helps to just sometimes shut the fuck up and listen. But yeah, I appreciate that, sister. I really do. She goes on to write, you know, write in to say, so to hear you speak on domestic issues or domestic violence or rape culture or how brothers defend Bill Cosby, believe me, there are a lot of women who appreciate what it is that you are doing. I heard your voice crack up when you talked about your mother being beaten up while you were little. That was genuine and it was heartfelt. I just hope that more brothers listen to you and take these messages to heart. Thank you so much. Well, I know that I've written a novel here. It's just been a while since I've written in, but these are things that stuck with me. Keep up the great work, Mrs. Spann. It's very much appreciated. That email was very much appreciated, Renee. It really was. But yeah. Yeah, I really do think that, like I said, there's just issues where brothers aren't necessarily, they're not looking at it outside of their own scope. And sometimes it just kind of takes a little bit of shutting the fuck up because we're so vocal about when it comes to women's issues, right? Like, men never really have an issue speaking up on women's issues, even if they're uneducated about them, right? And I will even say that myself, that I am uneducated on a lot of the things that women have to deal with. But at the same time, if I can speak to self-control like we did tonight, or we're talking about Bill Cosby and his rape, you know, allegations and the way that men, you know, rationalize it, or domestic violence or whatever. If I can speak if I can speak to brothers in a way where they can understand where a lot of why these things are issues, then I think it's a conversation that definitely needs to be had. But thank you, Renee, for writing in. I really do appreciate you for listening and for writing in, and I do hope to hear from you again, Sister Real Talk. Thank you so much. I got another email here, and this one is from Miss Cloak. And Ms. Cloak writes in to say, how big of an ego does one have to determine that they can force their opinion onto another? I ask this question because of how you talked about the Facebook dislike button that's coming. Personally, I think it's going to cause more trouble than it's worth. And if you really don't like something, it's better to not engage. Leave that person to their own devices, as I'm sure there are obviously going to be people who actually like what they post. Why do you think that you should be able to rain on that party? That is some self-important asshole shit if I ever heard it. Leave people alone and you won't have issues, period, Miss Cloak. Okay, I don't have my tablet plugged into this thing, so I can't give you the this is where you fucked up thing. But here's the thing, man. Like I said, I understand that people are going to use that Facebook dislike button as a way to troll. I understand that people are going to use that dislike button to start arguments or whatever. But at the same time, there are going to be some things that warrant a dislike, right? Now, take, for instance, this email. I could have disliked this email. I could have opted not to read this email, right? But you came on my show. You emailed me on my show to talk about how you disliked what the fuck I said. You don't catch the irony in that. You don't see the irony in that. That you emailed me. You took the time out of your day to email me and tell me that you disliked something that I said. You see how this shit works? Do you see how this shit works? You took the time out of your day to email me to tell me that my idea or how I viewed the dislike button was fucked up, right? Now, apply that same logic to that Facebook dislike button, right? If I see somebody post some shit on Facebook that's fucked up, I can say dislike. I don't even have to take the amount of time it took you to type this email out. I gotta say dislike and keep it fucking moving. Or I can further engage and say, hey, this is why I dislike this. This is why I dislike this. What you said was fucked up, and here's why. Right? Now, again, as I said on the podcast last week, I understand that there are going to be some people who just simply want to fight, that there are going to be some people who are simply going to be petty about the whole thing, but to act as if every interaction that you have with folks on Facebook is going to be positive is naive and is bullshit. It's not realistic. If you want that kind of an interaction, you get yourself into some groups where they foster that type of environment. But everything you say, everybody ain't going to like. And if I see some shit that's problematic, damn it, I'm probably going to say some shit about it. Sorry. Kind of like the way, you know, you emailed me here, right? You told me you didn't like my opinion. Well, it is what it is. But you took the time out to do that. Same way I could take the time out to go on Facebook, see some fucked up shit, and dislike it. So, was Miss Cloak? Yeah, you basically just proved my point for me. Thank you. You're far too kind. Jesus. All right. That's all of the emails. Those are all of the emails that I got this week. Hold on, let me check to see what the timer is on here, because I know I had. Okay, we're coming up on almost 2 hours. So let me go ahead and I got one voicemail. There was a voicemail that, hold up, got a lot going on over here. Let me play this voicemail so that I can respond to that. Just a second, people. Do-do-do. And I think he had an issue with the Facebook dislike button as well. No. Okay. Here we go.
Hello, this is Guthrie Prentice from Victoria, British Columbia calling. I just wanted to let you know that I'm enjoying your show thus far, as I found it on Google Hangouts.
Thank you.
The reason I'm calling is because of the fact that I wanted to comment on your discussion on the dislike button that may be coming out on Facebook. Personally, I think it actually is a good idea, provided if used sparingly. Specifically, if it can be used on if it can be used followed by a comment as to why somebody disliked a particular share, it might provide a framework for ongoing discussion. Of course, this leads into a discussion of something that I have a bit of concerns about on Facebook, that most often flame wars and ad hominem attacks are most commonly used when trying to call someone on something they posted, rather than discussing constructively why something may or may not be a post that someone agrees with. Anyway, just my thoughts on the subject. I'm going to continue listening to your show, but keep up the great work, and thanks again. Bye-bye.
All right, man. I like that voicemail. My man was cheerful. But you know what? He brought up, you know, pretty much what, you know, some of the concerns that people have about that Facebook dislike button, where, you know, it's going to lead to some ad hominem attacks. It's going to lead to flame wars and trolling. I think, you know, if you're a veteran, again, like I said on the last podcast, if you're a veteran of YouTube, if you're a veteran of YouTube and you've been doing YouTube for quite a while, you're already familiar with the aspect or the factor that is a dislike button, and how people in the comment section are, you know, whether they like you or dislike you, there are going to be some ad hominem attacks or comments or what have you. The thing with the Facebook dislike button, I know he said that there should be a provision where folks would need to explain the, you know, why they dislike something. That's something that I don't necessarily agree with, right? I get it where, you know, but and here's the thing, though. I think that as easily as I could, like, kind of go through, you know, my timeline on Facebook and like something, if I see it and I like it, and then I see something on my Facebook timeline and I dislike it, I can just dislike it. I think I should be able to have the same freedom. But at the same time, when it comes to the dislike button, I know, you know, I know that there are going to be times where you're going to dislike something and, you know, somebody's going to ask, well, why did you dislike it? Right? You're going to end up in that conversation one way or the other. Now, you can choose not to engage or not, but you're going to end up in that conversation anyway, because the person, if they value your opinion any sort of way, they're going to wonder why, like, well, damn, if this is something they thought was innocuous, they're going to wonder, why did you dislike it, right? And then you could probably engage them in that conversation. But there are going to be times, there just simply are going to be times where people aren't going to necessarily behave properly, right? They're just not. It's just not going to happen. But I think that, you know, they're just going to simply be time. There are simply times where it is perfectly appropriate to dislike something and not just like it and not just scroll past it if you dislike it. If somebody is doing something really fucked up, if somebody is posting something really problematic, you should be able to have, you should be able to say something to it. You should be able to call people to the carpet for that bullshit. In the same way that you guys do it when you text me or email me or anything else, or you dislike a video on YouTube, or you leave a comment where you accuse me of deleting comments, because I had that last week when we came, when me and Mr. Gates did that when me and Mr. Gates did that Art of Disagreement, I got a comment where someone said that I deleted their comments or whatever, right? But yeah, like you know, you're gonna have those instances. It's just gonna be a part of the experience, I guess. But at the same time, I'm just saying that to think that every time that you post something that everybody's going to like what you say, and that, you know, that because somebody dislikes something that you post, that they somehow dislike you, to extrapolate that, I think that's where we start coming into the issues and where people's egos start getting bruised and people want to fight and everything else. I want to say it is what it is, but at the same time, it's just like, you know, we got to be more more adult about our situations, right? We just got to be more adult about our situation. I think, you know, I think I said this a while ago. I was like, you know, when I was a kid, I used to think adults were talking about a whole lot of awesome shit, which is why I had to leave the room all the time. You know, you got to like when we was kids, it's like, you know, stay out of grown folks' conversation, and they sent the kids to another room, and you wasn't sitting around listening to them. Now that I'm an adult, I just know a lot of adults are just sitting around talking about a bunch of bullshit. There ain't really nothing elaborate or it's nothing like profound about a lot of the shit that they talk about. A lot of you adults are sitting around talking about a bunch of bullshit. So if there are any kids sitting around listening to this podcast, although you probably shouldn't be, your parents ain't talking about a whole hell of a lot. You could probably stay in the room. They just on some bullshit. Okay. All right, man. But thank you. Thank you again for calling in, man. I hope to hear from you again soon, man. Real pleasant on the phone. So I hope to hear from you again soon. Real talk. But it's time for me to get out of here, man. We're running up on almost 2 hours. I've been running my mouth for quite some time. But before I get out of here, of course, I got to let you guys know how you can get in touch with me again here at the Spin Report Podcast and let your voice be heard. You can hit me up at the hotline and leave a voicemail at area code 313-288-0485. That's area code 313-288-0485. Leave me those voicemail messages. I will play them on the show and respond just like I just did now. You can also email me at feedback@thespinreport.com. That's feedback@thespinreport.com. Leave me those voicemail messages. I mean, not leave me the voicemail messages. This is how you can tell I've been on for a while. Leave me those emails. I will reply to those emails. I will read those emails and do that right here live on the show. You can also chop it up with your man on Twitter and Instagram. My name on both of those platforms, of course, is Mr_Span. Hit me up throughout the week. We can chop it up. We can have some conversations. And yeah. Hit me up on both of those platforms. And, of course, leave your man an iTunes review or a Stitcher review. It helps the show grow. And it's a way for you to get your voice heard on the show. You can, all 5-star reviews are read live here on the show, and a thank you comes along with that. So go ahead and leave me an iTunes and or Stitcher review. And of course, for all of your Span Report needs, go to thespanreport.com. Leave comments on the episodes, vote in the polls on those episodes. Let me know what you guys are thinking. The feedback is very important to this podcast. Let your voice be heard. Letting your voice be heard is very important to this podcast. So go ahead, leave me a review. Chop it up with me on Twitter. Go to the website. Whatever you do, let me know what you guys are thinking. Engage with the show. Pass on the word. I really do appreciate it. But I got to get out of here, man. It's getting late. And I've been running my mouth for a long time. I'm tired. So until next time, fam. Peace.